Welcome to How to Build a Tent. This show is not about tent building, but how to make you successful. Today is going to be story time with Have You Heard of These Stories? And we're going to go through three of them if we have time. I might ramble on about one or two of them and not get to the third one. But hopefully we do. I think there's a lot of interesting things going on in the news today, and I wanted to share with you my thoughts and just thinking through all that is going on in the news and how it correlates and relates to you being successful. Before we get into those three great stories, you need to know we're part of the Fight Laugh Feast Network. Go over to the Fight Laugh Feast website, fightlaughfeast.com, become a member, put in HTBT in a memo field, and you'll get a sweet mug like this. You can also find me on the social media sites if you want to watch the show. You can find it on How to Build a Tent. Check out YouTube, our How to Build a Tent channel on YouTube. You can also see the live stream, 12 p.m. Pacific. You can email me, matt@howtobuildatent.com, and I would love to hear from you. You can DM me and give me your show suggestions, topics, questions, feedback, if you would like me to come speak, or if you would like to interview me. I'm open to all of those things. I actually have one coming up, which I'm pretty excited about. So you know who you are who invited me. Thank you for that. I need to get one more sip of water before we get into this today. The first thing I wanted to talk about today of the story really starts off with a tweet, and it's by a guy named Peter Schiff. Not Adam Schiff, that crazy liberal dude, but this guy's Peter Schiff, pretty smart. Don't always agree with him. He's more of a pessimist for sure. I think he was like made popular by one of the people that predicted the crash in 2008, 2009. I'm not sure. I know he has some, he's an investor. I know he has some interest in some gold companies. So whenever someone has interest in gold companies, I feel like they're always trying to sell fear. But beside that, I think he's really smart guy. I really like a lot of the things he says. He's a contrarian. I love contrarians because they always make you think. He moved down to Puerto Rico because you don't have federal income tax. A lot of people tend to do that when they have a lot of money, is to move down to places like that. And if you are looking for a place to get away from federal income taxes, you might want to check that out as well. I think it's federal income tax. It's a lot of taxes you don't have to pay because they're not a state, they're just a territory. And then you still get a lot of benefits of being an American citizen. And you're still an American citizen, but you get a lot of the benefits of being in America countries, but you don't have the taxes. So if you're looking for a place to go, check out Puerto Rico. And plus, I hear the weather is not that bad down there. All right, this is what he said in his tweet. Once you concede that capitalism is not working, you have lost the argument. Capitalism must be defended and government called out for its role in corrupting it. And like, it doesn't really make sense in English because again, this is a tweet. As you can see, I put it up on the screen. Democracy is the problem. If we don't acknowledge that politically incorrect fact, voters will only make it worse. Now, I love this, not just because I was talking about the same thing with needing that we need to stop trying to spread democracy. I talked about that a few shows ago, but it's nice to see this public figure who he does get around. He gets on the business channels a lot, and a lot of people listen to him. He has a pretty decent sized podcast, and it's just so great to hear other people starting to call out democracy as the problem. Although he's not one of the people that roll with the tide, he's a contrarian, so by definition, not a lot of people are saying this, but it's really true. Democracy is a big problem, and that is one of the things that our founders of this country foresaw and tried to hedge against by creating a republic. And again, I'm sure some of you, well, we are a democratic republic, but that is not the same as a democracy. And a democracy is mob rule, and it is what is killing us and hurting us. It is not capitalism. There is always pain in every economic system. Capitalism is no exception to that. But capitalism has by far raised the standard of living, the benefits for the overall society, more so than any other system in the world. And he goes on and he talks about how more people are going to vote to make it worse if you think that capitalism is a problem, if you make excuses for it, if you admit or concede any ground that democracy needs to be fixed or patched, approved, have a safety net attached onto it, it's going to drive more and more people towards socialism. And I want us smart tent builders, because I don't know what else to call you, viewers of the show How to Build a Tent, to be aware of that. There is no excuse that you have to make for capitalism, because capitalism is not claiming to be a deity. It is not claiming to take care of every individual person. That is not the role of an economic system. The role of an economic system is not to make sure that no one goes without pain and suffering their whole life. The goal of an economic system is to elevate a society as best it can within the rules, within the nature of humanity that is possible with the limited resources we have. And it is also the formation or the structure of how we ration limited resources. And I, again, and I'm sure most of you agree, there is no better system that has proven itself, not just what is ideal in a textbook or in theory seems to be really nice, but there's no better system that's proven itself to be able to lift the most amount of people out of poverty like capitalism. No other system has ever come close. We need to stop trying to change it. We need to stop trying to quote unquote fix it. We need to stop making excuses about it and put forward that it is by far the best system that man has ever come up with. And if anyone thinks to challenge it, then they need to show the proof. We have plenty of other tests, quote unquote, in other countries going on today, going on in Europe, Africa, South America, where they need to prove and show with facts that it is better than capitalism. And until they can do that, then they need to shut up and stop challenging capitalism. So that's my Smart Schiff segment. Not, again, Adam Schiff, but Peter Schiff. Really smart guy. You should check him out. Follow him. He has some really thought-provoking things to talk about. Now, the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is actually kind of fun, it like sparks the little boy in me, and it's about space travel. And it was really exciting. And I didn't really know or didn't even read about or... Yeah, I didn't know. I guess I can just stay right there. We didn't know. I didn't know about it. Is how much investment in last year came in from the private sector in the space investment, in the space industry. And that's really exciting to me because I think the more private capital goes into those areas, or in any area, I should say, the more opportunity, the more value we're going to see come of it, the more benefit we're going to come, like space travel and the ability to access technology that is utilizing space and satellites and all that kind of technology, which is really fascinating to me, really exciting, because, you know, it's just, again, like every little boy wants to go up into space and be an astronaut one time in their life. And to see more opportunities of space travel, of companies having employees that are going to be going up into space, being able to sell trips to space, or just being able to throw up technology like satellites into space, we'll get to that in a second, is really exciting to me. And so in 2018, $3.2 billion was invested in the U.S. space industry. And the U.S. space industry alone, it's really exciting. And just for comparison, in the last 18 years, it's said that $22 billion has been invested. So in the last year, 2018, 3.2%, that's like 10 or 11% of the total of the last 18 years of investment was invested last year. So it's definitely picking up, and that's really cool. I can't wait to see all the stuff that's gonna be coming out from this investment. Now, again, investment has implied risk to it because certain things aren't gonna work out, especially in space. It's a new industry, it's a new frontier still in a lot of ways. And so a lot of this investment might not pay out, but some of it's going to. And there's going to be a lot of great opportunities that come from it. Another exciting point about this is 113 firms total made these investments, and 71 of them have never invested in space before. So there's a lot of companies that are making moves into space and seeing the value that can be possible with new technology coming out and all of those things, that makes it worth it. There's like Boeing, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Coca-Cola, the Bank of Japan was one of them that was investing in the US space race. And a lot of interesting players that have a lot to gain, or they think they have a lot to gain from this. So it's gonna be really exciting. I think we're gonna be entering a really fun time. And I'm like really excited for my kids that are growing up in this time, because when they get to an age it's going to probably be a lot like in the 60s and landing on the 60s, right? Like 60, yeah, it was in the 60s. Kennedy landing on the moon, the space race 60s, right? Someone correct me on that. But it's going to be a lot of that excitement too, of like going to the moon. I'm sure we're going to end up going to Mars. And there's going to be a lot more opportunities in space, and there's going to be that little excitement, something for people, for kids, our kids, being able to hold on to. So I'm really excited about that. And they even say that the industry could reach in 2040 $1.1 trillion. And it's just really, all this technology, this investment is going to be getting us there. And there's like companies like OneWeb, Amazon, that they're looking to, and then you think like, oh, space, like what is it, how does it apply to me? But they're applying and looking for approval from governments to send like thousands and thousands of low flying, I don't know how you would say it, satellites, low orbit, that's the word, low Earth orbit satellites to offer broadband to remote areas. So there's companies that have a lot to gain by being able to expand the internet and expand high speed broadband to areas that haven't had it before, because it expands their customer base. And that, again, that's just another element of the digital economy that's coming forward that's really exciting and that's going to add tremendous value. Just imagine all the remote places that are going to benefit from having broadband, where if you're living in a really expensive place and you've been thinking about moving out into the middle of nowhere or where other people aren't, but you just haven't because it's not viable. Maybe you work at home and you need an internet connection, and now you're going to be able to do that, and you're going to save money by being able to buy a cheaper place and going out where not a lot of people are. And also, for bigger companies looking to invest in foreign countries that aren't developed, don't have infrastructure, this is going to really help a lot too. You know, like Africa has a tremendous amount of natural resources, but because of the instability of the government and technology limitations, it's really hard to get those things, and this is going to be helping knock out one of those barriers. Now, the last part that I wanted to hit on in this, and I want to throw out a question to you. Again, please answer the question. Let me know what your thoughts are. Email me, matt@howtobuildatent.com, or DM me on the social media sites, How to Build a Tent. As NASA is starting to change their strategy as well and their perspective. And here's a quote from the administrator, Jim Bridenstine. He said, if we can do the things we need to do in low Earth orbit by being a customer, then we can focus on developing capability at the moon, retiring risk at the moon, and then commercializing that activity while we then go on to Mars. It's interesting. They're having a shift from saying like, okay, we can have these companies subsidizing and paying them to help access those low Earth orbit places, eventually the moon, while they go on and explore and use the government funding and the government dollars to explore the far reaches. And then basically it's a chain. So they basically spearhead the way, they do the things that businesses won't invest in because of the risk that there's involved and the unknown payoffs or the uncalculable return rates. Companies aren't going to be throwing billions of dollars into space exploration if there isn't a tangible return that they can see, and it's a consumable risk or a tolerable risk that they can take. And NASA sees that as their role, and then they can bring on private investment to help fund them and to help make up some of those costs and to allow private industry to come in. And this is my question to you, especially you libertarians. Let me know what you think. Do you think that there is a role for government to develop certain industries, certain technologies like NASA and outer space that costs too much and that is too much of a risk that private companies, private capital investment firms won't go into because of that, because there's just too much of a risk, or they feel like they're throwing away their money? Is there a role for government to spend money and develop technology and develop industries like the space industry to pave the way and let private firms come in? So is there a role for the federal government to be spending money on the space race, on spending money on development in space, on sciences? It could be on any industry. What is your thoughts on that? Do you think it should all be private industry and the government should be completely out of it? I would love to hear your thoughts on that. That's a really interesting one, because you can't deny that NASA has contributed a lot to society. And even the things, if you go and you look at how much NASA has contributed to inventions, to food, to just a bunch of different things because of their technology they developed to get to the moon, it's absolutely fascinating about the stuff that we still use today. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Please give me an email and just let me know what your thoughts are. Now, the last story I wanted to hit today, and it's kind of a scary thing to me when you think about it, and it's about the Fed and Trump kind of going back and forth at each other. It's really uncharacteristic of a president to do that. And, you know, I guess, like, yeah, all right, so he's playing politics. I get it. He's throwing the Fed under the bus. I don't know if I really agree with him. Actually, I know I don't agree with him that we should continue quantitative easing. I almost said qualitative easing. That's ridiculous. But we're starting to see the Fed chip in. And here's a little quote. And this is a president of, I think it was the St. Louis Federal Reserve. I don't remember where it was. He says, I personally think the Fed should drop rates. Though this is the president. I personally think the Fed should drop rates. I think they've really slowed us down. There's no inflation in terms of quantitative tightening. It should actually now be quantitative easing. So quantitative tightening is what they're talking about when they're selling the bonds back into the market and letting them roll off the balance sheet. And that's taking away money in the economy, which is tightening, which is making interest rates go up, which makes the economy slow down. However, Neely, this is the Federal Reserve guy, pushed back on the president's idea about the future policy path, writing that quantitative tightening will probably not affect the economy in any noticeable way. And we're starting to see this battle, this public display, going back and forth of two different visions for the country, one of them by an elected person, Donald Trump, and one of them by a private company called the Federal Reserve, a private bank, that has very little oversight to it. And you hear like the Ron Pauls of the world, which I only agree with sometimes, talk about auditing the Fed, which I do agree with. Like, we should be taking back control. We shouldn't even have a Fed, I think. And I know that's kind of crazy, but I don't think we really need one. But we have them going back and forth fighting. And the Federal Reserve controls our money. It can throw us into a recession. It can keep us, it can put us into a bubble, and has done that multiple times in the past. And what's really scary is you think about how much control they have. You think about it in terms of the president and the Supreme Court and how much power the Supreme Court has. 9 judges has so much power in determining the place of our country. Think of the destruction they've caused with Roe versus Wade and the slaughter that they have allowed, and how small of a role the founders of our government had for them. I mean, they don't even have an enforcement mechanism. If you don't obey the Supreme Court, what's going to happen? The executive branch is going to, you know, prosecute themselves. I mean, you might say, like, well, in Trump age, they'd turn on their boss. But if you think about any other president, Holder would never go against Obama. And I don't think nowadays, now that Trump's kind of cleaning office, that the existing AGs would go against him. But it's amazing how much power these 8 or 9 judges have, 9 Supreme Court judges have. And it wasn't meant to be so. But how much more now that a group of people, economists, at the Federal Reserve, they do have power. And in fact, they have more power, I think, than the Supreme Court does, in a lot of respects, because, again, the Supreme Court has no enforcement mechanism, really. Who's going to enforce it? It's the executive branch that has to do that with the Attorney General. But the Federal Reserve can make decisions that impact the whole economy instantly. It can make and just have, just from a statement, make your investments drop 5%. Just with a statement. With a roundabout, unclear statement, it can throw the markets positive or negative. That's how much power they have. And they're not elected. And what is their accountability? And I bring that up because we're starting to see them get political. That is, to be arguing and debating with a political figure, our president. That scares me a lot. And it would behoove us, I love that word, behoove us, to start being aware of that and speaking out as much as we can before the Federal Reserve starts becoming more political. We should be condemning that. They shouldn't be saying things. They shouldn't have reactions. Just like the Supreme Court's not supposed to be political, even though they are. They shouldn't be able to be political at all. We should demand that they stop speaking out because we don't want them getting their pride hurt or starting to make political decisions instead of what's best for us. If they're going to have that power, which I don't think they should have, they definitely shouldn't be doing it for political reasons. And if they're starting to act out politically and speak out politically, who is to say when they make a decision to raise rates, lower rates, do quantitative easing, do the opposite, who is to say that they are doing that out of the best interest for us or a political issue or a pride issue? And that's really scary to me. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow. God bless.